Hello, welcome to episode 7 of Zero to Agile, where we continue the conversation with Ted Neuwert, Jessica Kerr, and Glenn Block. I am your host, Phil Chupixi. This episode is brought to you by Telerik Team Pulse, project management software based on Agile best principles. And you can find more information at www.telerik.com/teampulse. That's TELERIK.com/TEAMPULSE. Thanks for listening. Now on to the interview.
In terms of, you know, organizations, like there's always this big question of like, why should we do this? Why should we do Agile? And what's the best way for me to convince my organization that this is the right thing for me to do? And this could be its own podcast, but just to touch on it, I want Jess's initial
thoughts. I've not yet succeeded in that.
Okay. You're saying that unless the organization has already just made up its mind.
For Agile to work, you have to have the buy-in of those customers. They have to be willing to be the other end of that feedback loop. And convincing the people in charge, from the management all the way up, and then down the other side on the business side, that can be really hard.
Well, see, part of the thing, too, I think, is what are you trying to convince them of, right?
So again, and part I'm asking you is, what do you think you need to?
I mean, this is where we get into which parts of Agile are really necessary in order to be Agile, right? Do you have to be pairing to be Agile? Do you have to be doing unit tests to be Agile? Do you have to have a CI?
Big A versus small A.
Exactly. And
CI being continuous integration.
Right. CI being continuous integration. There's stories, you know, from the No Fluff Tour. Jared Richardson, for example, who was working at SAS, talked about how he managed to essentially covertly convert the entire company over to doing unit tests and CI. What he started doing, you know, because I mean, SAS is a big company, right? There was no way he was going to get management buy-in if he goes up to the VP level. And even if you do get that management buy-in, trying to force it back down the chain is also difficult sometimes. So he basically banked on the better to ask forgiveness than permission. And so on his little project...
I live by that rule.
Yeah, exactly. On his little project, they started doing unit tests and they set up a CI server. And then when it came time to doing some of the integration, because that was, he says at the time, that was the biggest cost, was trying to integrate with all the other teams that were working on their little pieces. And so when it came time for his team stuff to integrate with another team stuff, they found all of a sudden that the integration went much more smoothly. And they're like, wait, what did you guys do differently? Oh, we've got some tests, and we've got this continuous build thing. What's that? And they walked them through it, showed them the code. They said, that's a pretty cool idea. We like that. So that team started doing some tests and started
But they were obviously in a position where he could, or he was in enough of a position where he could say, okay, we're going to just do this.
Well, he could do it on his team of like four guys.
But what happens if I'm just a guy on the team? And I'm not in the position to say what the team will do.
Well, you can certainly start writing tests yourself, right? And you can certainly have a CI server running on your machine and checking the code. I mean, again, all it needs is a box. He was running the CI server on his desktop development machine.
What you're saying is, like, even if my team doesn't accept me even checking that in, and the rest of my team doesn't know about it, that doesn't stop me from doing it, from creating an environment where I can prove this actually works.
Now, working against your team is going to be an even bigger challenge than just the rest of the business.
Well, and if the team is going to fight you on this, Alistair Coburn has a great quote where he says, if you can't change your corporate culture, it might be time to change your corporate culture.
Find a new one.
Exactly.
So there's a couple things. You know, first and foremost, I don't know that you writing, Glenn, I'm pointing and the listeners can't see me point. So, Glenn, if you're writing unit tests just on your own, right, I don't know that it's fighting the team. All you're doing is I want to make sure my code works.
Yes.
And when you get out the door at 5 o'clock every day because you don't have all these bug reports against your responsibilities.
My code is more stable, and when people ask me, why is my code not having all the problems that others are? And I've heard of examples where that actually has happened.
Yeah. Well, then it comes down to what you're doing there is convincing the other members of your team. I've been on a team where we had 8 developers, and all of us were on board, fully on board, and we were able to, through great protest, at least we got a team room. You know, we had offices. We hated them. So we took over a conference room. That was a huge boost to productivity. We did pairing when management wasn't looking. That was a huge boost to productivity. But that feedback loop is the killer component of Agile that you can't get without the rest of the business.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the key things
because you're saying, like, you're not going to get the customer really to be have that level of involvement unless they're bought in.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
But in some cases, if you can do this, I mean, the rest of Jared's story was as other teams started, you know, sort of covertly getting on board with this idea, it after about, I guess, half the teams had gotten to this point, management all of a sudden, it was very clear to see that there were two groups within this product, right? These groups over here, they were actually able to integrate and deploy, and you know, their stuff had much, much fewer bugs. The statistics were alarming in terms of the disparity between these two groups. And so management came down, right? What's going on here? And everybody pointed at Jared. It's his fault. And Jared said, well, this is what we're doing, and this is the effects, and this is what's happening. And they said, how is this working? And so he explained unit tests, and he explained having the build server checking everything out, doing a compile, running the tests, making sure everything's working. And then one of the ops guys says, well, wait, what server are you doing this on? And Jared said, oh, it's my developer box right over here. The operations went ballistic. Oh, my God, we've got a server outside the data. They confiscated his developer box, took it away from him. He was without a machine for like a week or two.
This reminds me of the movie, you know the movie Monsters, the animation film from Pixar?
And
monsters, and when the monster comes back,
oh,
right. There's a human being, and they come.
Exactly.
decontamination.
That was exactly the reaction he said was kind of going on.
Wow.
But what happened after that was now CI was a formal part of how they were doing.
Oh,
this.
So
but
now
all
ops
those
was like, oh, we're going to still do it, but we're going to own it.
Well, we're gonna have the server, right? But now the all the management basically bought. Because they could see the statistics. And that, I think, is really where the key value lies, is proving to somebody else on their terms, right? If you walk into a meeting and say, all you businessy types, we should immediately adopt Java because it's the best technical platform out there. They're going to be like, so what? We don't care. As long as our software continues to work, as long as it does what we need it to do.
Why fix it?
Exactly. You walk in there and say, we should all move to Java because it represents a 50% cost savings over the next X number of years. They're like, oh, you said what? You know? So if you can prove via the use of statistics, your eight people in the team room, if you guys start tracking your velocity, if you start tracking your bugs, if you start demonstrating that some of these tactics can work, you can start to incrementally become more and more agile until you reach the point where now you can convince, you know, hey, we need to go talk to the customers to make sure what we're building is actually right. We need to do 2 to 3 week sprints or 1 week sprints or 4 hour sprints or whatever the hell you want to do. And let them play with the software. Let them discover. You mean they're going to be our QA department? No. But they're going to tell us if we implemented a feature wrongly. They're going to tell us whether or not we should continue down this path because it's really not something they're using, they need, et cetera, et cetera. Shortening that feedback loop around the features, not just whether or not the features are done correctly. And now all of a sudden, it's like, wow, the customers are really happy. They can start using it. Well, could we actually start cutting over to the new system now so we don't have to do this giant big bang? I mean, so many good things can start to happen when you just take these little baby steps and demonstrate value.
Have you ever heard of examples where it hasn't worked out? Have you seen anti-patterns?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, where Agile is, as a whole hasn't worked, yes. And I can cite one, and I certainly hope Ron forgives me. I don't think this is under FriendDA. But he was working for a very, very large financial institution. This was during the very early days of Agile, extreme programming. And he has a horrible, horrible feeling about it. He hates Agile. He hates extreme programming for this reason. Because they took the tenets of extreme programming that they wanted without the stuff they didn't want. So, for example, all of their requirements were written on 3x5 cards, but they decided unit tests weren't important. They liked refactoring, but they didn't really care that, you know, the customers were really involved. So, in other words, basically, these low-level teams, because it was a layered architecture, right? And you can imagine these like 6, 12, 15 different teams with like one team down here at the bottom and a couple other on top of them and a couple other on top of them. That core team down there at the bottom was constantly refactoring. And if you refactor without unit tests, what are you doing? You're just changing the APIs whenever you damn well feel like
jumping out the plane without the parachute.
Exactly. Well, but, and the thing was, they didn't splatter. It was everybody above them who completely broke.
Because they didn't realize that the parachute, right? Like, when I do it myself, I do it willingly.
Yeah.
Versus them, it was like, oh, somebody else packed my parachute. My
Bingo.
Parachute doesn't work.
Bingo. That was the thing, right? These other teams up here, they knew they were changing the API, but they just figured these other guys, when the code broke, they'd change their APIs to match. And it just rippled all the way back.
But you've never heard of, like, somebody who did everything the right way and it didn't work out. Like, because here you're saying they really didn't do the things they were supposed to.
The cases that I've heard where Agile really failed usually seem to be based around they weren't doing it right. And to me, what that really signifies, and by when I mean they weren't doing it right, I mean their approach to Agile was not one that
they were
that,
bending Agile to fit.
Yeah, or they weren't
for them.
And to me, this is where we really come down to the heart and soul of it, which is if you're going to do Agile successfully, regardless of TDD, BDD, you know, MSpec, Cucumber, whatever, to me, I think the key factor in success around Agile is your Agile coach. If you've got somebody who really understands Agile, who really understands what all these different processes are supposed to be doing, if he really understands what all these different ideas, how they're all supposed to interplay with one another, the fundamental principles. I mean, if you've got, you really want to have somebody who has that like tattooed on their DNA, because then he can walk into an organization and say, all right, let me see your organizational constraints. Let me see where your feedback loops are bad. Let me see how we can shorten up those feedback loops. You know what? You're right. You don't really have the corporate momentum to have a customer sitting down next to us to write these things, but
a proxy,
but we could do something along these lines. We can have an analyst, or we can have the analyst write the tuning it to fit within the organizational structure. To me, this is exactly like, you know, you look at the successful football coaches or any sports coach, but I know football and basketball better. The successful coaches are always the ones who look at the personnel they have and make their game plan fit the personnel they have and the personnel they're going up against.
And I think that there's an important distinction there. And the phrase that you said that really jumped out at me was tuning it to fit.
Right.
This isn't going out and buying a book on Agile. I don't care which, whether it's Scrum, XP, Kanban, Lean, Foo for that. And opening this book and reading it and going, okay, we're going to start at page one. And we're going to end at page 50, and we're going to do everything in here just the way this is, right?
Right.
You got to have it, like you said, tattooed on your DNA, that they understand the concepts and the spirit and the principles of it,
right,
and can tune it to fit. I think that's a great statement.
When you know why the rules exist, then you know how you can bend them
Bingo.
Without ruining them.
Yeah. Right. And one thing I wanted to come back to is there was a lot of discussions, great discussion on getting people to adopt Agile. And what you guys all said without saying it, and correct me if I'm misstating you, but you didn't go to the teams and say, hey, you guys are doing it wrong. I'm going to show you how to do it right. What all the examples were, we can make it better. Mm-hmm. So you're not going after somebody saying, hey, you know what, you've been doing it wrong for 20 years.
Even when you say you can make it better, you've got to, the problem you have is sometimes what you perceive as, you know, the challenge I've found is what you perceive as better, they may not perceive as important.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Right?
And this that's where you end up like hitting your head against the wall.
This gets to the larger point of any time. I mean, one of the problems that I frequently see is we're talking about, And forgive the stereotype, but we are talking about people who genuinely don't have great social skills attempting to engage in what is essentially a social problem-solution pair, right? You said, you're not going to them and saying you're doing it wrong, you're saying we can make it better. In other words, I'm not trying to insult you, I'm not trying to say you're stupid. Look, this is a social thing,
right?
Anytime you want to try to convince somebody, isn't this... Why isn't this something that you see as a benefit? This is you saying, Phil, okay, tell me why you're doing it this way.
Well, it's like the same thing with like TDD and separation of concerns. I see all these people and they'll sit there and be like, yeah, because it's separation of concerns and, you know, like Bob Martin says so. It's like
dogma. The dogma says, and therefore we must follow.
Exactly.
Dogma is the root of all evil, right? And I'm very dogmatic about that.
So does that mean you're evil?
If you hadn't guessed it already, dude. When you're trying to create change, when you're trying to literally talk about, particularly in a software company, a la Microsoft, when you're trying to change the way they've been doing things successfully for 20 some odd years, you're going to have to meet them on their terms. Right. You're going to have to say, look, let me see if I can get into your head, let me see if I can point out where the pain points are.
Yeah, I've unfortunately experienced that firsthand. I remember when I first joined, you know, the MEF team, Magic Sensibility Framework,
right.
Not to be confused with other things that sound like that word. I came from Patterns and Practices, where we were doing XP and Agile and TDD and all that other stuff, and it was really great. We were actually doing it. We had representative, you know, we had a customer proxy, customer owner, that product owner, etc. And I came to the MEF team all fired up, right? And I had all the like open source community behind me, like, yeah, go do it, right?
I remember when you did this.
I thought I was going to come in and just like cause all these changes in the group. And these are guys that have like been at Microsoft much longer than me. They've successfully shipped products. I have never shipped a product, and telling them I worked on Prism didn't carry much weight compared to the platform. And I tried that, and I remember, I will never forget this, because it was like really going down a deep hole, and it just kept getting deeper. I was in one of those conversations where you want to like go hide away in a cave, because I was like, what if we have stand-up meetings? It's just a way, something small, we'll just meet, you know, this is not... Are you saying we're not meeting enough? We need to meet more? I was like, no, but, you know, it's a way to, like, build more communication. Oh, so we're not communicating enough. You know, and it was, it just kept getting...
Did you feel like you were married at that point?
It just kept getting worse, right? And then I was like, it'll offer more visibility. Ah, so we're not visible with one another. So it was just... Yeah. But it made me realize after that, it was like, until I got respect on the team, and I never succeeded, I gave up on that whole thing. But there were lots of other things, like bringing our code and putting it out on CodePlex and getting it open to... And once I had respect from the team, a lot of these things were achievable.
And you use the word respect, I'll use a different word, credibility.
Credibility, actually.
Because credibility is one of those things that can either be earned within the company, exactly. A la what you see at a Microsoft or a Google or an Apple or an Amazon, or it can be from outside the company. There's a saying that, you know, a bunch of the other speakers and I toss around at one another that you know, management's willingness to listen to your words is directly proportional to the number of miles you flew to get here. I did an engagement once where I was brought in to consult on a particular company, and I started saying, well, you could do this and that and the other thing. And one of the guys in the group, really young kid, 20-something, said, you know, we went out to lunch, and I was talking about some of the ideas that I had, you know, just kind of bouncing them off of him. He's like, oh, this is exactly what I've been trying to tell him for months now, but I don't think you're going to get any success. I'm just going to warn you now. These guys are not ready to change for anything. And I'm like, well, you know, we'll see. And so I go into this meeting. He's in the meeting. And they said, so, you know, Ted, what did you see? And I said, well, I thought you should do this, you know, A, B, C, D. Just kind of lay them all out, these ideas. And they're like, those are good ideas. We like those ideas. Definitely, we should. This kid almost had a heart attack. I mean, he's getting red in the face. He's angry because he'd been saying this.
Exact same things he said.
Exactly. And you know, I said, you know what? Let's conduct a small experiment, right? What's something else that you think we should do? You walk into the CEO's office in the morning and say, boss, you know, based on what Ted was saying, I think we should do this. And then in the afternoon, on the next day, just so we get a little separation, I'll go in and say exactly the same thing in exactly the same words. And exactly as we expected, his words totally fell flat. Yeah, well, no, I think that would be too much of a change, too radical. I'm not sure we're ready to do that. Literally 36 hours later, I go in, say the exact same thing. They're like, that's bold thinking. That's radical. We like
this. It's credibility and trust, I think.
Trust, I think, comes from credibility, right. But yes, it's, to me, it's all about credibility.
Because when he's saying it, he's young, you know, more wet behind the ears. They're not sure that he's going to, maybe he's going to put the company in a place that's going to be very dangerous.
Despite the fact that he's right.
Right.
And This is the thing, is credibility is a currency. It really is a currency inside of companies. And if you have credibility, I mean, everybody has some amount of credibility within the company. You earn that, of course, by, you know, writing good code, you know, meeting your deadlines, blah, blah, blah. But when you choose to spend it, you need to spend it on things that you think are important to you, right? This is another of those choose your battles wisely things, right? Because it is a finite currency.
Absolutely.
It's not infinite.
Did you know that Telerik's Agile Project Management solution, TeamPulse, features a unique analytical tool called the Best Practices Analyzer? This will help you and your team easily and painlessly adopt Agile principles while working on software projects. The Best Practices Analyzer is especially useful for not-so-mature teams because it helps them stay aligned and on track throughout the whole process, but also helps mature teams discover things they might have missed in the process. So please go ahead, check it out, support our sponsor at www.telerik.com/adopt-agile. That's www.telerik.com/adopt-agile. And without our sponsors, I would not be able to do this podcast, so please give them a visit. Thank you. Now back to the interview.
So one thing we didn't talk about at all is for people that want to get started, what's the first step? Like, you mentioned a coach. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just getting started. I'm in a company where there is no coach. Nobody is supportive of this thing, but I read some articles and books, and it sounds interesting. What's the next step? Where do I start?
Well, I think, to me anyway, I think you start with, you know, something that will build that credibility. I mean, to me, again, it all comes back to
what I mean by where do I start, I've never even done this agile thing.
Oh, you mean for me as a person, just me as an individual? Yes. I'm not even trying to change
the culture. Before I can even get to try to change anybody else, I need to go through the process. Like, let's say I have no experience, but it sounds interesting, or why I've heard this podcast, and it's like, ooh, that sounds compelling. What do I do next?
You know, I personally, I think one of the easiest ways to get started is to write unit tests in your own code. I mean, you know, whether or not you check it in as part of the core source tree, or whether you know maybe stand up your own subversion repository where you put your unit tests to test your code before it goes in, whatever, right? Depending upon how much support you have from the group around you. And I think today, if you go to a company and say, hey boss, I want to start writing some unit tests just to see how well it works, I think that as a concept is something that a lot of management is at least aware of. And it's like, okay, tell us how it works, right?
Right now, the Agile's been around for long enough that a good place to start would be your coworkers. Ask all of them. Then not only do you find somebody's going to have some experience.
Do you think so? I mean, I think there's plenty of shop. Like, I haven't been out there in a while. It's six years of the mothership. I just passed my 6-year anniversary.
I know in St. Louis, most companies, it's a fairly small IT community, and yeah, most people have some experience with at least some component of Agile.
Within the company, or you're saying just people you know within your sphere of...
Both, but especially within the company, because then when you're asking them for advice, not only are you learning something, but you're getting their buy-in. And then they're going to be able to help you.
I'm imagining situations where, you know, like I'm in a company where maybe I don't know anybody who does it, but I want to get going.
Well, I think,
and maybe that's not a problem.
Maybe one of them has read a book. Maybe one of them's thought about it. You get them on your team.
I see.
When you enlist them early.
Well, you can also find. I mean, there's Agile user groups popping up everywhere. We've got two different ones in Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Agile Roundtable, which is mostly made up of developers, and then we have Cincinnati Agile, which is mostly made up of non-developers, project managers, QA, and things like that. So find a local user group,
yeah.
Right?
And aren't there places where people are doing even like code katas?
Yeah,
like
that's starting to spring up too. I mean, yeah. I'm hearing about coding dojos.
Do you think those are valuable? Do you think like the only thing I worry about sometimes with the katas is like if I'm writing something about a calculator, can I really relate it?
Well,
to the stuff I build.
I think those things are going to help you become a better coder. Right, because practice helps as long as you're writing it the right way. Right, if you practice, you know, I was very involved in martial arts. If you do the form wrong 1,000 times, guess what you're going to do on 1,001st time? You're still going to do it wrong.
Right,
right. So
that's where having the coach becomes helpful.
Yeah, and to Jessica's point, you got to find some kindred spirit who at least wants to go down.
So
this
coach
path
is in
with
quotes.
You.
It could be somebody who's more seasoned, recognized, whatever, but it could just be somebody who knows more than you and who's willing to guide you a bit down the path.
I think ultimately, I mean, just as with sports, right, the best athletes have their own personal coaches, right, mentor, if you want to use that term instead. But certainly getting started, right, it's not like, you know, these gold medal winning coaches are available just to pick up brand new beginner students, right? If you want to learn martial art, you know, you could read a book and you'd do it wrong, or more than likely most of us would go take a class.
Right.
And that instructor may not be the black belt national winning champion, but you know, this guy may have learned by somebody who learned by who learned by somebody who learned who learned by somebody.
Well, regardless, he or she knows more than you.
And that's and as long as they can teach you some of the correct forms.
Right.
And I think, yeah, this goes to your point. You find somebody who knows more than you and has the ability to explain it to you and is willing to work with you, et cetera. And that, I'm sorry, I've got to believe that literally every major metropolitan city in the world, I mean, if they're doing IT software of any form, unless you're working out of your house in you know, outer Podunk, New Jersey, right, or outer Podunk, Montana, where you're the only software developer and you're working 10,000 miles away from your company, okay, that's going to be obviously an edge case.
No offense to New Jersey or Montana.
Well, there are some podunks in New Jersey and Montana. I'm sorry, even in Washington, where I'm from.
Yeah, I know.
The point is,
every state has its.
Every
podunk.
State has an outer podunk, absolutely. except maybe Rhode Island. I'm not positive of that.
It's not to be confused with West Podunk, right?
Right. Okay, because those are two.
But the West Podunk has a Walmart.
Right. Exactly. That's why it's West and not outer podunk. There's going to be a group of IT individuals. I mean, if you've worked in this town for any length of time, you probably know who they are because people have left the company, other people have come into the company. There is a social circle there of people to work with and people, and chances are good. If you've got 10 geeks in a room who've been coding for more than 2 years.
Some of them are doing some.
Somebody at least has been exposed to it.
Another option is there's a whole bunch of lists out there, listservs like Google Groups, Yahoo Groups, and you find
Bing
that
Groups? Are there any Bing Groups? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
MSN has
to Google Groups.
No, MSN does have some type of groups, but there's groups of many flavors, including ones I didn't mention, but they're out there. And you can go out there, you know, and there are places where you can go, and they may even be experts, but you find often that if you go there and say, hey, I'm interested in learning Agile, that A, they'll come back with a set of resources, B, you might actually find somebody local in your area on that list who's, you know, willing to connect up with you, you know, just be careful about any stalkers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and this is where the mentor relationship becomes really helpful. Right?
Videos are another thing. Like, Jim Shore has a whole video series about TDD. He's got like 50 or 60 different videos, and it's all of him going through different exercises. And then I think that Roy Usherov also has done a whole bunch of stuff. And he also recently, a couple of years ago, I guess it's not recent, I'm old, published a book on testing. So yep. there's a lot of different resources. But I have to agree with... you know, with Ted. Like, I learned the hard way of just going off and just trying to do it. And I remember at that time, some of the lists were not so accommodating. I used to go to the XP Yahoo group, and, you know, there it was like, if you know, some of the... I felt bad about asking some questions because I'd feel like an idiot. But today, I think in general, people are a lot better. And there's no replacement. I mean, I didn't really get it until I joined Patterns and Practices and had people like Peter Provost sit next to me and show me, or Brad Wilson.
Right.
So I would definitely recommend try to get a buddy. But one of the interesting thing you can do, even if you can't find people in your area, more and more people pair over Skype. You can actually find somebody who will sit with you because they can see the code as you're writing it. It's not the same exactly as somebody sitting next to you, but even if you're in the middle of nowhere, as long as you have an internet connection, and if you're in the middle of nowhere you don't have an internet connection, well...
You're not a programmer at that point. I mean, sorry, that's an edge case that just does not exist.
But there are lots of avenues you can pursue, and they don't have to take that much time, too. You know, I can pair in the convenience of my home over Skype. I do pairing all the time with people. It's pretty amazing. So I think technology helps us.
I think the core thing here really is just do it, right?
And have the will.
Don't let the obstacles stand in your way. There are enough avenues here available to people that there really is, if you have the interest, there's no reason not to start doing it.
And if, at worst case, if you try it, you're doing these things yourself, you're talking to your coworkers and trying to get it into your company, and it doesn't work, that's going to be great talking points in your interviews for that next corporate culture.
This is true.
And also, don't be afraid to, you know, like you might bump your head against the wall as you're going through this. It's a learning process. It's going to take time. And that bumping in the wall is actually good because you learn from it. You know, if you learn from it, you realize, well, I'm not going to do that next time. Or maybe you do it two or three times, but then you realize.
Well, and one of the things as developers that we always seem to do is we'll struggle with something, and we'll finally get it, right? And somebody will say, that's amazing. How'd you do it? Oh, it was easy, right? Because we forget the beat the head against the wall. You know, another tenet of Agile is fail fast.
Yes.
Right? You know, that's part of that rapid feedback loop. If I take 6 months to figure out that I'm not going to be able to write this code, I have not only failed myself, I failed the project, failed everything else. But if I can do something very quickly...
And I reach out
to Bob, who works with me, and say, hey, Bob, let's try and pair and figure out this TDD thing. And it doesn't work, right? Say, well, Bob, thank you. Have a nice day. And I'm going to go ask Susie, right? And try and find somebody who I can pair with. Because it takes more than just having somebody who knows more than you.
Pairing is an art. Pairing is a culture. You know, just sitting next to someone and coding, you'll drive each other crazy.
Right. So, any last thought? This has been, I really appreciate you guys coming on the podcast. I think this has been amazing. And I think our listeners have gotten a lot out of it.
This is awesome.
And Ted, we'll start with you. Any last words?
Just do it. Credibility.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, doing it will give you some of that credibility, which will then allow you to go in and you know, change some of the corporate culture. You'll be able to tell people, well, when I tried this, this happened, and you're now coming from a position of experience. So then once you start working through those issues, you start building credibility with the rest of your company because your code is higher quality, blah, blah, blah. Which unfortunately sometimes means that you get to fix more bugs that weren't in your code, right? Because they tend to spread the bugs evenly around the team. So, but be that as it may, I mean, if you're in a company that's not doing this and you want to change that, right, you just start doing it. And then show that this reaps rewards, which builds your credibility, which you can spend then to try to convince upper management and the rest of the tree underneath them, right, your coworkers and so forth, that this, in fact, will yield better results.
Jessica?
In the spirit of my lightning talk yesterday, there's a social aspect to this that we've talked about a little bit, but enlist the people around you. And there's more ways to build credibility than just numbers. You can build credibility just by getting to know a person. So talk to your coworkers. Find out who shares this interest.
So wait a minute, are you sure?
Or share as you learn.
Are you sure
you don't know?
Are you sure you're in IT? Because I'm pretty sure I just heard you say talk to your coworkers.
I know, I'm also a girl. That's weird too, right?
No, and that's great advice. I mean, we don't do enough of that.
I polled every developer in my company yesterday, and both of them agreed. Talking to your coworker makes your work life easier.
It's great. And that's obviously another tenet of Agile is the transparency, right? So if you're doing the communication and you're being transparent.
It's all about communication. Hey, and you can practice communication.
Right. Even if you have to talk to a rubber duck, still talking. Go on.
So a couple of things. So I'd reiterate what Ted said. There's no replacement for doing it. You're just not going to, you can read all day long. Like I said, my experience, I read it and it sounded good. Some things I was skeptical of. The things I was skeptical of, I actually ended up becoming a believer in. But it wasn't until I did it that I could actually see and perceive the value. Two is don't be afraid to take baby steps. Don't be afraid to, you know, bang your head, like I said. That's just part of the process. It's like any other craft, anything else you learn, you're going to go through that. The other thing is, even if you don't change your company, you'll become a better developer. You'll write better code, like where you are, even if the rest of the company doesn't buy in. My mom used to say to me when I was growing up, she used to say, you know, you can't necessarily change the whole world. You can change your small area. And this is one area that you have complete control in, even if the rest of the company doesn't buy in. And the minimum it will do, as Jess said, is, you know, it's going to put you in a better shape to go somewhere else.
Right. So certainly work on continuous improvement. Right, and make yourself happier, right? Because if you're not fixing all those bugs, You'll be happier. You'll be getting the cool assignments and whatnot.
Cool.
So, again, thank you very much for being on. This has been awesome. I'm sure our listeners are really going to enjoy great information.
Thanks for having us, Phil.
I'm just glad I didn't do another meth podcast.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, concerns, or suggestions, you can reach out to us at telerik.com/zerotoagile. Follow us on Twitter at @zerotoagile, or send us an email at zerotoagile@telerik.com. See you next time. Thank you.